This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you today. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number here. Patrick is here. I am here. We had a fantastic time in town this last weekend in Minneapolis with the Sexy Liberal debut opening tour, date of the tour here in Minneapolis over at the Pantages Theater on Saturday. It was a hoot. You were able to join us. We were at their pregame event there. Did you see Fugelsang and Sparks when they came on, Billy?
I did not see them. I got there a little late, though. I don't know if they stopped in early and took off. I got there about a half hour or so after the advertised start time.
They are just amazing, and it's such a good show. And it's something that I'm just in awe of when they get here. Now, I will say this is the first time I've ever had any kind of one-on-one time with Hal Sparks, because Schechter, Sparks, and I sat kind of back together with each other behind the backstage, and Hal Sparks is like one of the smartest people I have ever met in my entire life. Dude, I like to think I'm somewhat smart. I'm not exactly, Pulitzer Prizing it or, Nobel Peace Prize, but I like to think I at least read up on the issues and stuff. Sparks was running circles around me. Just amazing. Now, Minneapolis, St. Paul, we've had our turn. I do want to make sure I mention to Chicago, I cannot recommend this show enough. And you guys get the special advantage of they're going to be in your town August 17th with the DNC going on at the Vic Theater. You need to get tickets. You need to get tickets. If you want to see, I posted photos all up on the socials, at Matt McNeil Show on Twitter, Matt McNeil 1 on Threads. You can find me at the Matt McNeil Show Progressive Citizen X on Facebook. You can find me Matt McNeil Show on Blue Sky. You can find me on Mastodon. There's lots of ways for you to touch me. But you can find me any of those places there. I posted a whole bunch of photos from the show. Had a great time. Cliff Schechter, of course, was in town and was in studio last Friday for the 3 o'clock hour, 9 o'clock hour in Chicago. And then I was able to get together with him yesterday after the show on Sunday morning. We went out, Bill Corbett and I, from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks. And I went out and grabbed breakfast. I dropped him off at the airport. I was exhausted. That was so much fun. To all the listeners that came on out, thank you very much. It was wonderful to see you. It was wonderful to get together again. And if I can say this, there was one woman. This is at the meet and greet afterwards. And we had the show. We go back in the lobby of the Pantages. And Sophie and Ron were there, and they did a great job. They helped kind of, as the grand poobahs of the event, kind of held things together. And there was a woman there now, and Steph had just left. I think Frangela was leaving as well. And this woman came up to me, and I'd recognized her from multiple events we have done up here in the Twin Cities. And she just came on up, and she had this huge smile. She was just so happy. She goes, "I can't tell you how happy I am that they are back on the road and they're back out seeing people." And through about the minute or a minute and a half I was talking to her, all of a sudden her eyes welled up. And she was like, "This is so important. We are trying to save this country. For goodness sakes, we need people like Stephanie out there." And then she just started wiping tears. She goes, "I'm so sorry." She goes, "I'm just so happy Stephanie was here." And I gave her a big hug. And yeah, it was comfort food for the soul. How about I say it like that? Stephanie Miller and the crew, comfort food for the soul. Vic Theater, Chicago, August 17th. I'm going to do my best in the 2 weeks leading up to that show to get everyone back on the air in this hour to talk about that, because it makes my show better. I'm not going to deny that. What's with the killer turkey gangle outside the radio station here?
Couldn't give you a good answer for that. Apparently
they've been here all day. I mean, we have a gaggle. Is it a gaggle of turkeys? It's a murder. It's not a murder of crows. It's murder of crows. It's not a murder of turkeys.
That's a flock of turkeys. I'm not sure.
It's a gaggle or things. There's a tom out there that's not happy. Now, if you've not, I was in Chicago. Lovely Chicago. Love Chicago. Absolutely fantastic. Minneapolis has been inundated with wildlife lately. I don't know if this is them saying, you know what? No, these are our streets. I don't know. Kind of like, you know, West Side Story, only with animals versus humans, with actual sharks. Although we do not have sharks here in Minnesota. The turkey population in the Twin Cities, and of course, prepare your joke, Chicago. The turkey population has skyrocketed, and they are some mean, duh. They've got attitude. You go up in the northeast side of town, they're like, you know, they're like a roving gang. They're the meanest cats in town, man. They're sitting outside. I mean, are they on my car right now? Do I have a turkey on my car?
Unfortunately, the security camera doesn't point in that direction, so I can't give you an answer for that either.
Well, thank God we let all the criminals know. Well, I guess I don't have anything to worry about, because there's a mad flock of turkeys out there that will take anyone down that gets anywhere near them. They started, that tom started coming towards me as I was walking in the door. Careful. Just be careful. Watch out. Make sure ready. Someone pulls in, make sure we get them into the building, okay? We don't want another one of those tragedies. 952. We've never had anyone taken out by a turkey at the radio. Well, hi there, as advertised. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I just want to pull up. Oh, it's been a spectacular day. Apparently, Donald Trump is on trial. His hush money trial got underway today, marking the first time the former president had been tried on criminal charges. The presumptive Republican presidential nominee is charged with 34 federal counts related to his alleged efforts to conceal $130,000 in hush money payments made in 2016 to silence claims he had an extramarital affair with adult film star Stormy Daniels while his wife was pregnant with their child. Prosecutors are expected to link the case to allegations of a catch-and-kill scheme to bury other negative stories about Trump before the election, which was something that was going on. Trump is represented by Todd Blanche and Susan Nichols, two experienced New York attorneys handpicked by the former president in his particular case, who will probably not get paid. I'm just, you know, going off of experience. Blanche left a career at Caldwell, Wickersham, and Taft to start a firm and represent Trump, while Nichols has experience representing the Trump organization in the past, according to the Washington Post. Across Trump's team are Susan Hoffinger and Joshua Steinglass, chosen by the Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg to lead the prosecution. Steinglass is experiencing prosecuting high-profile murder cases and will question witnesses and give closing arguments. Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, who served jail time on campaign finance charges related to this role in facilitating the payments, is expected to testify, as is Daniels. Judge Juan Merchant is presiding over the case. And so far, as you can imagine, it is an absolute hoot. Many people have ripped on it. 50 potential Trump jurors were dismissed en masse after saying they couldn't be fair. This is where they're at right now. They're kind of addressing the jury pool right now. Trump is pushing his attorneys to fight harder. He is terrified of this case. And my guess is going to be, and this is something that was brought up today, he is terrified of what happens when Stormy Daniels spills the beans and what actually went on. And he knows as well, because he is Mr. Reality Television. he knows when she comes on out with the details that that is where all of a sudden it's just going to get, So apparently he's pushing his, well, at sometimes he's pushing his attorneys. At other times, he apparently is getting a little tuckered. Oh, he's getting a little sleepy. And I am not joking. He apparently fell asleep during the hush money trial for allegedly covering the sex scandal. On Trump's first day of the Manhattan courtroom, reporters spotted him looking as though he was falling asleep as attorneys discussed rules for jury selection. It very much looked like Trump is dozing off right now, said courtroom reporter Stuart Bishop. Tough to see on screen in the overflow room, but I swear Trump is nodding off at the defense table, reporter Eric Ubelacher agreed. His chin just hit his chest, then his head shot back up. We've all been there. Maggie from the New York Times, says that, who's followed him forever, also said it sure appeared that he was falling asleep. He's facing 34 counts of falsifying business records there. So, he's a little tuckered. He's a little tuckered. Get a little sleepy. I will say this. If you've paid attention at all to the right-wing news is, I'm guessing, everything the Republicans do is a highly coordinated choreography. There is no impulse. There are teams working on everything. It's clear everyone on the right now is terrified of this, because I noticed earlier there was almost a begging and pleading on Fox News as they got, guys, it only just takes one juror. If there's only one juror that can go out there and say, I'm not going to, even no matter what the evidence says, I'm not going to prosecute. Just one juror does that, it's going to be the case. As a matter of fact, one of them actually escalated this to the question of whether they actually jury tampered. A Fox personality social media post on Monday raised some eyebrows, and a U.S. congressman called it jury tampering. A legal expert suggested it could be compromising, conspiring to commit jury tampering. Clay Travis, an attorney and founder of the conservative sports and American culture website OutKick, made the comments. His Fox News bio calls the founder of the fastest-growing national multimedia platform one of the most electrifying and outspoken personalities in the industry, who provides his unfiltered opinion on the most compelling headlines throughout sports, culture, and politics. On Monday, his account on Twitter displayed a post that reads, "If you're a Trump supporter in New York City who's part of the jury pool, do everything you can to get seated on the jury and then refuse to convict as a matter of principle, dooming the case via a hung jury. It's the most patriotic thing you could possibly do." So he's literally, it's one thing to fantasize about maybe a juror doing this. He actually was ordering someone to infiltrate the jury and find him not guilty. Jury tampering, that's what they do. It's a felony, wrote Eric Swalwell, the Democrat from California, in response. I mean, this guy's trying desperately to say, I wasn't trying to jury tamper. But no, he was trying to jury tamper. And I'm going to guess he's going to face some charges on that as well. More when we come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on a Monday. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Trump is clearly just losing. I mean, this weekend, that whole thing, I mean, we were all talking backstage at Sexy Liberal about his comments about the Gettysburg thing, which was just ludicrous in regards to the whole, it was a beautiful thing. Was it? I don't think it was beautiful. It was a lot of dead bodies. That's what it was. That's just someone who doesn't have the slightest damn idea what happened in Gettysburg. He just knows it's a place that they mention. And, the fact that he brought up as an American president, Robert E. Lee, oh, the heck with you, man. That's the bad guy here. That's, you might as well say Hitler was a wonderful guy. Come on, man. Stop it. He was the bad guy. He owned slaves. He actually beat his own slaves. No, he was a bad guy. He was there to keep slavery as a way of life in this country. No, he was not a good guy. And by the way, you know, there's a lot of U.S. soldiers. As you're praising the guy that was attacking the U.S., a lot of U.S. soldiers died at Gettysburg. So, you know, he is, and he's been up late at night posting on Truth Social. I think he's really, this is really starting to drain on him. If you saw him coming in today, there was a few times where they showed video of Trump at the courthouse. He looks like he's about to fall asleep. And I want to, I'll bring this up again in the next segment. But it just, it's, this is clearly taking a toll on him because, and frankly, I think the RNC, I think the Republican Party, I think Fox News and all the right-wing news, they know he's screwed in this case. And so that's why they're basically, now the full court pressure is make this case as unbearable as possible and then try to find, hopefully sneak a candidate onto the jury who is going to basically, get a hung jury and go that way. So, yeah, that seems to be the case. And the one guy in Fox News, like I said, lie to get on the jury. That's jury tampering, dude. You're going to have some hard time in court explaining your actions. But, you know, as he tells, he's a business genius. Not so much. Speaking of business geniuses, hey, let's take a look at the old Donald Trump stock and how it's doing today. Oh my God. It did not have a good day. It was down 6 points. It was at 30. So basically it lost a little less than a fifth of its value today. 5.98 points, 18.35% down today. Now, once again, this is not a surprise. It shouldn't be. I mean, we talked about how the information you had on this, the prospectus you had on, the Trump media stock, Truth Social and stuff, was that it wasn't making money. I mean, as Hal Sparks pointed out, and we talked about this last week, a single Chick-fil-A restaurant has made a single one, not the Chick-fil-A corporation, an individual Chick-fil-A restaurant has made more money than Truth Social has. So this stock being valued at $65.70 when it opened up was ludicrous. It didn't make any sense. As a matter of fact, once again, we talked about the Reddit comparison. Reddit, when it went out, was making something like 8 times more money than Truth Social, and that was valued at like 30. Per shares were like $30 per share was their value. So it was way below what Truth Social was. So this was a gig. This was a ripoff. And we said, just watch this come tumbling down. And it's interesting because there's a lot of Trump supporters who have bought Trump stock and were buying it at 50, and now it's 26. And I guarantee you, it's not going to be going up anytime soon. You've lost half your money right there. And that's just, this is why you don't trust Trump. This is why you don't trust him. But I want to make sure I put in perspective what this drop means. So there was one point where Donald Trump was at, they said he had $4 billion of this. That was when the stock had peaked at $71 per share. $71 per share. And that was off of, It was estimated the entire corporation's value was $7 billion. He owns 60% of that. So that was $4 billion is what he had at that point in shares, which he could not sell. There are certain restrictions on his ability to sell these stocks. It's at $26.31 right now. And if it's time for Matt's Math Corner, if you take 26 and you divide it by 71, that means it's basically got a third of its value. So it's lost two-thirds of its value at this point. It's lost two-thirds. So if he had $4 billion and it's divided by 0.66, let me do this again. It's going to be 4 times point. There you go. So he has $1.6 billion. In basically a month, he's taken $4 billion and he's made it $1.6 billion. Actually, it's a little less than that, isn't it? It's 1.8 It's 1.3 billion. No, my bad. It's 1.3 billion. He's doing an Elon Musk here. You know, Elon Musk is in free fall mode too. You know, it's bad enough that it was one of the dumbest business decisions ever for him to buy Twitter. It is showing, and his cars, because now he's a right-wing troll, all the lefties that wanted an electric car, especially now that other car companies are rolling out electrics, they're basically abandoning him and going out there. And this whole stunt with this Tesla truck where they keep trying to act like doing a standard roundabout at a mall is somehow four-wheeling. It's not going well for him. But he seems to be, it's valued at, I think Twitter's now valued at $7 billion. He bought it for, 43 billion or something like that? So Donald Trump is getting into his realm. Actually, I think Tesla, he's probably doing worse. But Trump right now, I guarantee you, one of the reasons why that guy is looking like he is just exhausted is that when this stock hit the market and it was up to $71, you could see $4 billion. All my problems are solved. Now it's down to $1.3 billion. No one's buying the prospectus that they put out. Everyone's trying to abandon this. Most of the people that are – when you see ads for Trump stock on social media saying, I'll get you a 700 shares for $10 a share, it just tells you everything about it. It's basically – a huckster's paradise at this point. He knows it's going to go down even worse. And like I said, my guess is going to be the second he can sell as much of it as he can, he will. I wouldn't be surprised if he's actually already sold someone, which some tried to do it illegally. Like, hey, Eric, I want you to go take this check to the bank. You know, it's that sort of thing. You know, you let Eric take the fall for him. All right, Dad, you like me. I got a job. There you go. So I think, this is going to go badly for Trump, and it's delicious. Oh, the pain is delightful. We'll take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McGill Show.
If all of the kings had their queens on the throne, we would pop champagne and raise a toast to all of the queens who are fighting alone.
Broadcasting in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk, and in the afternoons on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Good to have you with us. Thank you for being with me today. 952-946-6205. There is, and Patrick, you just let me know once again that there is the prosecutors are asking for charges to be filed in the violation of the gag order, correct? There should be a hearing on this.
Yes, prosecutors have asked Judge Juan Merchan to fine Donald Trump $3,000 over three social media posts they say violated a gag order that bars the former president from commenting on witnesses.
Ah, he's got enough of the stock. We can give it to him if he gets it quick, though, because that's dropping in price. Another thing, too. We're about to hear the same people who said, we're going to unleash an army of Trump fans on that courthouse in New York City. All of a sudden scream, well, we have jobs. We can't. Why do you think we were going to be there? Now, I'm going to say this on the quick side note. Trump fans during the weekday will line up starting at 8 a.m. on a weekday for a rally in Tennessee or in Wisconsin or in Ohio. They're lining up on a weekday at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, no, they don't have the jobs they insist they do. This is just embarrassing, though, once again. Lawrence O'Donnell at MSNBC wasn't exactly blown away by the crowd of Trump supporters outside the Manhattan courthouse. The revolution will not be televised because they just didn't show up. A couple million Trump voters live within an hour of the courthouse. Maybe 50 showed up. And I've talked about this with other rallies where it's like, okay, just looking at the surrounding area where this rally is happening, all you need is people on their lunch break to come on out and show support, and they just don't. And if anything shows you, a lot of what the right screams is this grand movement is basically just made up, is this. He's not lying. There's a lot of Trump supporters, especially Staten Island, who could just easily take the tunnel over And voila, they could be there. They didn't have time. And no, not all of them were working. Plenty of them had time. They just didn't care. And or else they were just, they're really loud when it comes to a Twitter post. But when all of a sudden they have to go out and do it in public, well, I don't want everyone to know who I am. I think that's a lot of it, too. I'm going to change direction here because obviously it's delightful to watch how bad things are going there. I want to point out one of the things that has been brought to light in regards to what happened with the shooting down of the Iranian drones that were headed for Israel. And one of the things that the national media will not talk about is that Biden brought together a pretty unique team of countries, the UK, the United States, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, united. Those four countries united, Jordan and Saudi Arabia, under Biden's leadership to shoot down the Iranian drones. Outstanding. Reports are indicating that Biden was instrumental in bringing together the coalition of UK, Jordanian, and Saudi pilots to shoot Iran's drones out of the sky. Biden's leadership on the world stage has been unparalleled. Now, I want to make sure I bring back, if I can, you know, Rip Van Winkle there in the courtroom, sleeping. And how many times in the last 6 months I've heard stories from people that when he was in the White House and they were called to the White House to be part of official briefings on China policy or military readiness, and Trump would get in there and, let me tell you about Stormy Daniels. Let me tell you about why she's a horrible person. And he would spend an hour meeting, he'd spend 45, 50 minutes gossiping about his personal problems before finally saying anything. Joe Biden brought together the world to stop these Iranian drones and did an excellent job doing so. An excellent job. Who do you want in charge of this country's military? The guy who's out there screaming about Stormy Daniels to generals? Or do you want someone who actually gets results? And here is, and once again, I want to point out, how dare the national media not bring this point up? Because this is kind of one of those things where it's like they're so focused on he's too old that they don't want to put out there. It's like Joe Biden basically kicks some ass here. Damn proud that he's my president. I want to talk a little bit about this. Israeli Minister of Defense told the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin Sunday that Israel had no choice but to respond to the unprecedented missile and drone attack launched by Iran over the weekend. The U.S. official, another source briefed by this had told Axios, the Biden administration and several other Western countries allied with Israel are urging Netanyahu's government to not rush into retaliation against Iran that could lead to a regional war. The chief of staff of Israeli Defense Forces said Monday that Israel is considering the next steps in the launch of so many missiles and drones. Israeli territory will be answered with retaliation. And mind you, pretty much all of them were shot down by Biden's coalition. Ahead of the meeting Monday, the Iraq Deputy Prime Minister, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, said the U.S. is coordinating a diplomatic response to the Iranian attack intended to prevent further escalation. Strength and wisdom must be the two sides of the same coin. Biden said during a meeting with Iraq's Prime Minister, we're committed to a ceasefire that will bring the hostages home and prevent the conflict from spreading behind what it already has. The United States is committed to Israel's security. Biden is certainly not looking for war with Iran, and I'm confident the Prime Minister is aware of the president's concern, the White House spokesperson told reporters. Iran's foreign minister told UK Foreign Secretary David Cameron in a phone call Monday that Iran does not want escalation, but if Israel seeks adventure, our next response will be immediate, stronger, and more extensive. The Israeli War Cabinet convened on Monday to discuss a potential response. Iran launched nearly 350 drones and missiles against Israel on April 13th in retaliation of April 1st Israel strike on an embassy compound in Syria that killed a top Iranian general. Most of the drones and missiles were intercepted outside of Israeli airspace by U.S., Israeli, British, French, Jordanian, and Saudi forces. the Gallant told Austin in a phone call Sunday that Israel can't allow ballistic missiles to be launched against its territory without response. Israel won't accept an equation in which Iran responds with a direct attack. You got the win, take the win, Biden told Netanyahu during a U.S. won't support any Israeli counterattack against Iran. And by the way, and I want to make sure we understand something. The people that are wanting this war to escalate are freaking idiots. And I'm going to take some time here and break down why exactly war with Iran for the in regards to the United States is not a good idea. I want to start by talking about a few different cases during World War II. Starting off with Iwo Jima, which was a Japanese island that they started fortifying, I believe in either 41 or 42. They started fortifying that island, and it was a pretty big battle to take that island back. Guadalcanal was another one. Guadalcanal was captured, I believe, in 42. And by the time we took it back, it took us 6 months to take that island back, even with a much larger fighting force than the Japanese had. And the reason why is because they were able to, in both the cases of Iwo Jima and Guadalcanal, be able to dig themselves in and entrench them and sit there waiting for a ground invasion. Because there's only so much you can bomb into, you know, that you need to eventually send troops in. And they knew that. And so you can try to bomb the island into the Stone Age, but the reality is eventually you're going to have to send troops in, and that's what took so long. And it took, 7,000 dead Americans on Guadalcanal alone, 7,700 injured U.S. veterans at Guadalcanal. So it was a pretty brutal battle for a little island. But we took it. There is this idea when it comes to dropping of the nuclear bombs on Japan to end World War II, do we drop the bombs or not drop the bombs? And that wasn't the question. The question is, do we do a land invasion into the Japan mainland? And Japan, although not really threatened too much by either China or Russia, who earlier in the century had gotten kind of spanked by Japan, and Japan had continued to, you know, run rampant over China. They weren't expecting necessarily an attack. But when it became clear that their motivations might lie more against other potential countries, they started building in defenses on the Japanese mainland. And it was going to be brutal. It would probably have been worse than D-Day. It would have taken probably hundreds of thousands of American lives to take back Japan if from a ground invasion. It really was. It was kind of one of those things where they realized this was not going to go well. And then there was the other aspect of the Japanese, the leadership, which was teaching their people to commit suicide rather than lose. And this is what you saw at Saipan, on the island of Saipan. The Japanese people that were there, the soldiers, the family members, the children, there's a cliff called Suicide Cliff. They all jumped. It didn't matter. The U.S. is like, we're done. We're not going to, no one's going to, we're done here. You don't have to do this. They still committed mass suicide at Saipan. And that was something that was also there. Would you start invading? And if we started moving through, how many Japanese people would have committed suicide as opposed to being taken over by the Americans? It's not nearly the cut and dry decision that people put out there as far as, it was just, do you nuke or not nuke? It was, they were looking at casualty rates. And on paper, as atrocious as this might sound, they said that the nuclear bomb was probably going to be a lot less people, definitely a lot less American soldiers than would be if we did a land invasion. these are tough decisions. These are the decisions that history will forever go back and forth on. And it wasn't as if we were the only one that had it. Eventually, some other countries were going to get it too. So it's hard to kind of comprehend what would have happened. You know, second guessing history is always kind of an interesting, you know, concept, but really it is just armchair quarterbacking. But you have to make sure you understand the full context of what the decisions were. Iran, ever since the Shah of Iran fell and the Ayatollah took over, has been building up defenses for a potential land invasion. This isn't Iraq. Iraq would be considered a cakewalk, and that was a lot of dead American soldiers and a lot of permanently injured American soldiers. But Iraq was easy compared to what you are going to have to experience in Iran. And the world is not going to tolerate anyone using a nuclear bomb. So Israel, and I think they know that. Even though I think there are people within the Israeli government right now who think they should nuke Tehran and just say, you know what, what's done is done. I think that there is enough people there to realize that that's not going to happen. But Israel is not stupid enough to try to invade Iran. They just don't have the manpower or the weapons. I mean, Iran's a much larger country. And you would have to, I mean, it would basically take our entire cadre of missiles and bombs to basically even start making a dent in that country if we decided to go to war with them. A land invasion there, I've seen some people conservatively, and I can say, and like I said, I was U.S. Army. I'm a veteran of the military. I've seen some people conservatively say 100 to 150,000 American soldiers. There, that's what it would cost to basically invade and take over Iran. 100 to 150,000. That's a lot of people that are dying for Israel. Because once again, this is Israel's fight, even though we're helping them. This is not our fight. I want to take a few more moments and talk about this because this is really, this is something we have to be very careful with when we talk about where our stances are. We'll take a break, come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So we need to understand. Iran is not like just dropping a few bombs in some tropical island in the Caribbean. It's not Iraq, which was still a pretty big freaking job. This is a very different beast in regards to war. And like I said, Benjamin Netanyahu, who has an agenda, and, you know, Trump is in it for money. Putin is in it for power. Netanyahu is somewhat power, but I think he's trying to get he's dealing with a lot of personal grievances as this prime minister and getting into bed with the far right of the party who wants to basically, you know, they want the United States to do the dirty work for them. They know it's insanity for them to try to invade Iran. That's why they want the United States to do it. And the United States would be fools to get into that because that's 100, 120,000, 150,000 dead Americans because Iran has been building up and waiting. I talked about how Japan at Guadalcanal and Iwo Jima were able in 3 or 4 years build up enough defenses to where it was going to be a tough go. We talked about Japan, who for 20 years was building up their defenses, and it was decided that the cost of life would be so great, it would probably be the better option and less casualties to nuke them than to actually invade with a land invasion. Well, the same thing goes for Iran, only they've been setting up and waiting for this for 45 years. I don't even want to comprehend what it would take to get a foothold in that country. The amount of bodies it would take. And that's just the beginning of it. You're fighting over tough terrain across the country, major cities. You're easily 100, 150,000. And there are a lot of Republicans who are out there saying, we should do this. And here's what I want to say to them. Then put your freaking money where your mouth is and sign up your kids, not as the dental assistant in the military, not as the transportation guy sitting on the back base. No, no, no. Sign your kids up for U.S. Army infantry, not your state guard, not your local National Guard. So you basically are polishing an airplane in Montgomery, Alabama. No, you think this is a good idea. It's really easy to sacrifice 150,000 other people's kids for your cause. Show me you're committed by having you and your family sign up for infantry. Front lines, off you go.
Oh, I didn't say, I don't know. You know, I mean, I salute the soldiers, but you know, some people should make sacrifices.
Yeah, they can't tap dance away from that enough. And that is, as a veteran of the military, that is the question that everyone should be asked anytime they say we should commit troops someplace else. Are your kids going? Are your kids going as infantry? Not as the guys in the behind all the lines who are, you know, being a quartermaster or sitting there and sending out press releases. Are you going out there putting the gun on a gun strapped to your back with your helmet on and into the battle you go? No. Then stop asking for other people to do it, because if you don't have skin in the game, then you should shut up and sit down, because there's a lot of bloviated jackassian Republican politics that talks about how we should throw our military here and throw our military here, and they never once think about the soldiers that are actually there committing to death. And if it was their kids, guarantee you, they'd start thinking about it. I'm not talking about Hamas or what's going on in Palestine. I just want to talk really quick about Benjamin Netanyahu and Iran. And as a veteran, I honestly get the feeling that Benjamin Netanyahu would gladly climb over 100,000 dead American soldiers to plant the Israeli flag in Tehran and say, I did it! I honestly do. I don't think I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think he cares about any of the American military. He likes our weapons. He likes our support. He likes our finances. But I think I have zero doubt in my mind he would sacrifice 100,000 American soldiers for his causes in a heartbeat. So we should not be necessarily listening to him. We should be listening to our military leaders, which Joe Biden is. And Joe Biden very quickly said, you want to go out there and start a war with Iran, you're on your own, because we're not going to do this. Because you know what? We know what's waiting there. And you can't just bomb that country into submission. You're going to have to send in some land forces. So for anyone out there who's sitting there saying, oh, we should do this, well then, find your local U.S. Army recruitment center, take your little Billy or Susie down there, get them to sign up. Once again, not for filling up trucks way behind the front lines. No, 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 no. You need to sign up for infantry and show that you're really committed to this cause, and then off you go. And then at least I'll give your argument some credence. I'm not necessarily going to agree with you, but at least I'll say to yourself, at least you understand there's a sacrifice that's going to be made here. Now let's talk about the points. I think we need to be very, very careful on how we proceed here. And anyone in this country who is saying we should sacrifice 100,000 American soldiers, I mean, that's going to be a draft, folks. That's going to be a draft. Anyone thinks that we should be sacrificing 100,000 American soldiers to go fight Israel's wars for them? No, that's a really bad idea. That's a really bad idea. And by the way, once again, winning is just the beginning of that process. You got to hold that country too. And guess what? I guarantee you, Israel will want the American forces to be the occupying force that they're getting pock shots taken at constantly, not them. All right. By the way, apparently Donald Trump is livid at Maggie Habersham from the New York Times. Haberman. Apparently, she reported that he'd been sleeping in court, and so now he's all upset with her. Did he start nodding off as he stared at her? Because, you know, kind of, sometimes you get sleepy that way. Oh, this Trump trial is going to be a hoot. Chicago, have a good one. We are back tomorrow. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two up next. Oh, God. I'm sorry. I pulled the Trump. Oh, it's the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. Oh, God. Oh, is it tiring? 952-946-6205. Okay. I've got to start off this hour by talking to Anne in St. Paul. Hi, Anne. How are you doing? Your sister's happened to be at Sexy Liberal. They're delightful. You saw the man, and if I can, just wonderful time at On the Rocks. What a great place. That was a lot of fun down on the Nicollet Diner at Roxy's Cabaret. We were at On the Rocks, which is their special upstairs club, and it was just fantastic. Got to see them there, and then I got to see them at the show as well, especially in the meet and greet with Fugelsang and Hal Sparks and all those guys. And, yeah, I got to see them. And apparently Anne in St. Paul is not a fan of this radio show. I see. Oh, my God. Not Anne. Oh, my God. No. Yes. Yes, Anne in St. Paul. I am here. And, yeah, I do sometimes get angry. I know. Democracy crumbling around us. Heaven forbid. But, hey, that's just me, man. That's just me. I mean, I can talk Taylor Swift with you if you like. I mean, I know a lot about Taylor Swift because I've got a daughter. Well, I like Taylor. Who doesn't like Taylor Swift? Taylor, well, Republicans. I like Taylor Swift. I can talk about that. You want to talk about soccer? You want to talk about global warming? I can talk about these things. You don't have to hate. You have to love. That's what we do here. Tough love. Thanks for complaining when your sister is listen to AM 950 Anne in St. Paul. What a great time. Just what a great time. It was a lot of fun taking Schechter. So after the show on Friday, Cliff and I headed out. We picked up my wife and we went driving around the metro. And he wanted to specifically to go to the Hubert Humphrey gravesite. And he talked about this on the air a little bit, that for him, you know, he's a big civil rights guy, and Humphrey was the beginning of the civil rights movement in the Democratic Party. I mean, he was the guy that came on the stage and said, we need to embrace civil rights, and this led to Strom Thurmond and the rest of them storming out of the Democratic Party. But he was there, so I took him over to Lakewood Cemetery and showed him the memorial over there. We drove around, went into the city, and saw a lot of different fun things there. We went over through the U, saw the University of Minnesota campus, got over to St. Paul. He was like a lot of people that come here, and they really, are there really two downtown? Yeah, there are. And there's St. Paul's over here. Minneapolis is over here. Took him by the third precinct, the burnt out third precinct, still there on Lake Street. Showed him where all that happened. And then we went and grabbed some dinner over on Eat Street. And then yesterday, like I said, I had a great time with him and Bill Corbett. From Riff Tracks and MST3K, the three of us went out and got breakfast before I took him over to the airport, and that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun because I have been talking to Cliff Schechter for 12 years. I think it was Janet Robert when she ran the station. Janet came in and said, I met this guy out in, I think it was Vegas or something like that, and said, he's a really good political guy. You need to talk with him. So we brought him on board. And, yeah, we've been talking to him ever since. That was the first time I've seen him face-to-face. After 12 years of talking with him, the first time I saw him face-to-face, it was fantastic. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I had a really good time. It was a lot of fun staying backstage. I want a big shout-out to Robin Asbell, who has, every time they've come into town, she's brought food. And I will post a picture. She made a biscuit. Holy God, was that tasty. That was a tasty biscuit. It was wonderful to see her again. Wonderful to have some of her food, and then of course the whole crew in town, starting off for the Sexy Liberal Tour as it begins in Minneapolis, St. Paul. A great showing out there. So I just, to everyone that came on out, to everyone, to all the nice comments I got, whether that was at On the Rocks or after the show at the meet and greet, thank you. It's wonderful. I'm lucky to be part of your lives. I am lucky to be part of your lives. I got a cool bracelet from Pinky. She gave me a cool one that says "Vote Biden." I love that. Thank you very much. Had a great time. Just an absolutely great time. And by the way, if you were downtown Minneapolis on Saturday night, you know how all those Republicans say, "It's a ghost town." Downtown Minneapolis Saturday night was packed to the freaking gills. Going down the streets, it was like walking in Chicago, man. And that wasn't because there was a Twins game or the T-Wolves were playing Saturday night. No. There were just all sorts of events coming on. There was concerts going on. There was plays going on. Sexy Liberal was going on. There were people just going out for dinner. It was packed. When Cliff and I left the Pantages at about 11 o'clock, we went on the street. The street was packed. That's right next to First Avenue. We went back behind there, and that was packed, completely packed to the gills. And, yeah, it just it's great to see. And speaking of packed, if you did not get out onto the Stone Arch Bridge, you're not going to be able to do that now for 2 years. I went out on Saturday to kind of prepare myself for the event. I said to myself, you know what, with the Stone Arch Bridge closing down, let me go hike it. So this was Saturday at about 1 in the afternoon. Both Stephanie Miller and Cliff Schechter had gotten out and walked around because it was gorgeous. If you didn't get out on Saturday, it was an absolutely gorgeous day around the metro. They were out. They went out. I mean, Stephanie went walking around all sorts of areas. She went down to the Nicollet Mall. She was over on the riverfront there. She said, yeah. I said, how busy was it? And she goes, it was packed. When Cliff went over to the Stone Arch Bridge at about 9 that morning, he said it was packed to the gills. He said, I couldn't believe there was that many people out walking around. When I got there at 1 o'clock, it was just packed to the gills. All day yesterday, it apparently was packed to the gills. Now, that's a lot of people getting out there trying to enjoy the Stone Arch Bridge before it closes down. But for all you clown cars in the right who basically sit there and who want to fantasize about nobody's down there. There's a heck of a lot of people down there, man. And I get it. You're saying, well, if I go down to the IDS Center right now, there's not many people working. I got bad news for you. If you go to where the old Woolworths was on Nicollet Mall, there's no one there because the Woolworths is gone. And guess what? Things change. Things change. Hennepin Avenue, when I was a kid, was a dump. Absolute dump. People didn't go walk down there. There were Schinders down there. There was the Skyway. There was the Nanking. And then there was a whole bunch of adult bookstores and, adult-oriented entertainment. That's all Hennepin Avenue was. No one was down there. It was wall-to-wall people on Saturday night. You don't want to come down here? That's fine. We don't want you here. We got a ton of other people that do want to come on down here because it's a lot of fun down here. But you guys with your fantasies and your deranged world where you're sitting, well, I was in this building for 1 minute and there was no one there. You know what? I'm not denying that. But that's not downtown Minneapolis. Go up to the North Loop. Jeez. Talk about an area that never existed and now is packed. Go down Washington Avenue where we had that strip of parking lots that's now all apartment complexes. The downtown is humming, man. The downtown is humming. There are tons of people downtown. Going across the river. Right across the river. That's all packed. But, this one place where I went and it was busy once isn't busy, so it's a fair. And you guys are pathetic, man. And like I said, you don't want to be here, don't be here. We don't miss you. And you can sit there and act as if going to your strip mall restaurants and watching things on pay-per-view is actually having a life. You know what? I'm going out and enjoying it. Next weekend, I'm going to go to the Guthrie. I got to get to see two plays this weekend. I'm looking forward to that. What are you doing? Sitting at home? Are you going to watch that spring football league? Is that what your big plans for the weekend are? Good luck. 952-946-6205. I just get so tired of them just screaming, "No, it goes down. It's abandoned." No, it's not. You may not come down there. You might be scared of it. And don't get me wrong. North Star Plaza? I was down there. There was the parking ramp. I was parked there. It's right down the street from the Pantages on 7th there. And it used to be a whole bunch of stores, a little mall that they used to have in there. And that's pretty much empty. Yeah, there are some places that just didn't make it. That's unfortunate. But don't be so stupid to think that just because the one place that you used to go when you were a kid that was packed, that's no longer packed, is a representation of what's going on in the city. Well, you need to go out in the city because basically everywhere else in the downtown is packed to the gills on the weeknights. That's for sure. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. As I mentioned, the Stone Arch Bridge is now closed. It closed this morning. Walkers, runners, and bicyclists won't be able to fully cross the popular landmark for over a year. The work is starting on the St. Anthony main side of the bridge. People can walk from the Mill District side closer to downtown, but they'll have to turn around halfway point. The $38.5 million project involves repairing and replacing stone and mortar in the 141-year-old bridge to slow deterioration and improve its overall condition. Heck, I can't believe the thing still stands in that river. That is a fast-moving river at that point. And the fact that they built that and it still stands today is a salute to engineering, that's for sure. Work on the St. Anthony main portion is expected to wrap up spring 2025. At that time, the other half will close for repairs. They're hoping it will be open by fall of 2025. The full project could be complete by spring of 2026. So, you know, next fall, they're hoping to have it back open. We'll have to see. They have the detours. Most of the detours, you know, there still is a decent trail for you to do using the Central Avenue Bridge because they got a nice walkway down that now that they've repaired that. You can do the Central Avenue Bridge and then go over to the Hennepin Avenue Bridge and kind of loop around there. But I'm just going to let you know you got a little bit of a hill there that you have to deal with. So just FYI as you head on out. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let me take a break right now. Come on back into some other issues when I do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Monday. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. No one's downtown. Dude, man, well, if no one's downtown, how come I couldn't find a parking spot and even a $20 ramp? Dear Lord. All right, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let me get to some little bit more local news. MyPillow co-founder Mike Lindell suffered another court loss on Monday when the Supreme Court refused to hear his appeal related to having his cell phone seized by the FBI as part of a vote tampering investigation. Lindell, who's embroiled in multiple lawsuits that have drained his company of cash, has asked the court to take a look at a ruling made last September after he attempted to make the case that his constitutional rights were infringed when he was ordered to hand over his phone while sitting in the drive-thru at a Hardee's. The Hardee's is the best part of it. Hey, Patrick, those Frisco burgers, man, those are tasty. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I hope he was there for the Vic Burger Thursday when they've got some good deals.
Oh, he's all over. You know he's all over that Vic Burger action. You know, he's just that kind of guy, man. I mean, I would say it is your constitutional rights were violated if they took your Hardee's biscuit from you. Now, I think we all can agree there. You don't mess with the biscuits, man. Those are some tasty biscuits at Hardee's. You ever had those biscuit sandwiches in the morning?
Yeah, that would definitely be I will go to prison to protect these biscuits.
Diving in front of a bullet for the biscuits. Those biscuits are a reason I am on blood pressure medication, just FYI. They are fantastic. But they didn't take your biscuits. You still got your biscuits. No, they took your phone. In an earlier ruling that the Supreme Court decided to not review, Judge Ralph Erickson of the Eighth Circuit wrote, Lindell's irritation as to where and how the government took possession of his cell phone does not give rise to the constitutional claim, let alone showing of callous disregard for his constitutional rights. According to the report from the USA Today, in 2022, phone seizure was related to the investigation and the sharing of sensitive information from Colorado's computerized voting systems. I think he was kind of stashing someone or helping someone evade arrest or subpoenaing or something like that. I can't remember the whole thing. The FBI questioned Lindell about Tina Peters, the Mesa County clerk in Colorado, who was indicted in 2022 over accusations that she improperly permitted someone to copy access passwords and other files from a secure voting system and post them online, exposing the machines to hackers. Peters has argued the files posted online from the machines she supervised demonstrated flaws in the system. In Lindell's firing, she accused the government of harassing those who persist the question of integrity of computerized voting, particularly those in the 2020 election. And by the way, the information that she posted did not prove a damn thing. Outside of that, she's too stupid to understand what copyright infringement means. And needless to say, they got his phone. Oh, how greasy was the phone? Was it one of those things where they picked it up and it was like one of those prop bars of soap? Whoa, a little greasy there. He's been enjoying the Frisco burgers, I see. Those are a little greasy there. Monster Frisco burger. Oh, delicious. Did he have like grease running down his chin? Give that back. Oh, here's your biscuit, sir. Not that, the phone. Okay, the biscuits too. 952-946-6205. Are we ready to go with this on this? All right. This is our good friends at Heartland Signal. Apparently, there's new audio from Steve the Draz Drazkowski. Here we go.
If the policy of this body is to simply give away money in the form of, in the bill, it's called gift aid. Gift aid. And before this bill passed, I hadn't heard that term before. Maybe I haven't read every part of statute, Mr. President, but gift aid taken from hardworking taxpayers of Minnesota and given to somebody simply because they attend a public institution and their parents happen to earn less than $80,000 a year. It is just given to them. And we aren't going to, in here, the intent seems to be, speaking of intent, Senator Putnam, the intent appears to be to not give the money, the gift aid, to kids who happen to attend a private school. Mr. President, that's called discrimination. This bill blatantly, perfectly discriminates against private school students.
Oh, God. All right, so just to follow around the bouncing ball head that is Steve Drazkowski, his argument was it's called gift aid, and gift aid is wrong when it's going to 80,000 people making $80,000 or less, going to those families, then it's wrong. But then why is it not going to the wealthy families as in gift aid? So that why isn't the poor paying for the wealthy people's kids to have a private school education or scholarship money to go to a private college? Why not? Steve Drazkowski. And by the way, and I want to make sure you understand something. This bill is going to help far more people in his district than it's going to hurt. And yet he is basically telling all the people in his district who make less than $80,000 a year, I'm not going to help you with the cost of college unless we help the wealthy people first. That is, you know, there's Republicans are desperately trying to find something that they can vilify the Democrats with. But as they do that, they keep saying stuff like this. Once again, it's a gift if it goes to people who are poor. But then we need to give it to the people who are wealthy and gift them? These guys are so bankrupt. And he's not even hiding it. We need to give taxpayer, his entire argument at the end of that video was, we need to have, if you make $40,000 a year, your tax dollars need to go give a wealthy kid a private school college education. And until we give those kids the money, then we shouldn't give anyone the money. Wow. That's your Christian right there. Let's think about the wealthy first. God, just you got to put this stuff, DFL, you've got to start putting this stuff on billboards, man. They cannot not step in it. They just so desperately want to push these troll Twitter account talking points that they can't help themselves. And you guys, you need to expose this. I told you, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, my daughter said, this is a 20-year-old. She says, when I was born, I had autonomy over my own body. Today, I don't. That's why I'm voting Democrat. Dear Lord, you should be printing those T-shirts and dropping them off at every college campus in the state. That's a hell. I guarantee you, a lot of young women will wear that shirt easily. Give them away. You need to get out there and spend money on when these guys are saying stuff like this. You need to get out there and spend the money to make sure people hear every single thing that they say. Once again, he starts off by saying, it's a gift that you're burdening the taxpayers. Now, mind you, whenever it's giving money, the argument is he's got to try to convince everyone that the majority of people, by the way, make less than $80,000 a year. That's the truth. The majority do. I think it's the median income in this country is, what, $62,000? So the majority of people in this country, in this state are going to benefit from this bill. But the way he portrays it at the beginning is, this is a small group of people stealing everybody else's tax dollars. Well, no, it's the majority of people's tax dollars are going to go help their own kids. But then all of a sudden it goes from helping a gift to help the people who are needy to, I'm for this if that gift is for wealthy families sending their kids to a private college. You can't make it. And like I said, Drazkowski's district, I guarantee you the majority of people in his district will benefit from this bill, and he will never, ever allow it. Well, it, good thing he's in the minority. This will pass probably without his stupidity involved. But and of course, then he'll take credit for it. When the poor farmer comes up to him and says, my kid was able to go to college because of this bill, then all of a sudden, oh, well, thank God we got that passed, and hope and pray that they don't know that he tried to kill it. God, is that a frustrated dude? I mean, there's a guy, I don't know what his upbringing was like. I've got some guesses. But dude, you got to be like the way you are today. Why aren't we out there forcing the poor people to give everything to the wealthy? I'm paraphrasing. It's not what he actually said, but when he got to the point there, why aren't the taxpayers paying for the wealthy people's college? It's not too far off. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Monday. Hey, Ben. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So I want to, hey, if people are doing goofy, stupid things, I'll call them out. I don't care which political party they are. I'll start on the left side today. St. Paul City Council member Annika Bowie is more than $1,200 in unpaid parking and speeding tickets dating back to 2021. That's not far to date back to have that many parking and speeding tickets. All right. I'm just going to, you know, if this is true, council member, you need to go to remedial driving school, because that's a lot of speeding and driving tickets and parking tickets. That's speeding and parking tickets. You need to relearn, because you're basically not helping your cause if you're paying all this money in speed in driving and parking tickets. And question, did you think when you ran for a city council that you think that this stuff could get erased? I know it doesn't work that way. So, but that's 3 years. Yeah, you need to learn how to drive a little safer. Let's just be honest about it. As well, and this is starting to become a bit of a problem, there are questions about her sworn affidavit of candidacy, which lists a home address at which she does not reside. Bowie's affidavit of candidacy, filed last August with the Minnesota Secretary of State's office, lists her home address as 839 Aurora Avenue in St. Paul. The duplex was one that she attempted to buy but did not ultimately purchase. She never lived there, no, said a recent property owner, Rodney Mulholland, who sold the duplex to a different buyer around April 1st. She won her eight-way race for the Ward 1 seat in November with 40% of the vote, elevating her to a key position to advocate for the Summit University and Frogtown neighborhoods, as well as parts of the adjoining areas. And in a recent interview, Bowie said she lived at 839 Aurora Avenue under a previous landlord when she ran for office in 2019, but later moved to Roseville and currently resides down the block in her parents' house her parents have owned for more than 15 years. She said her family roots in the neighborhood go back 100 years. I live in Ward 1. My address is the 800 block of Aurora. She said, I don't know what would be the reason would be in question. I live with my parents. Well, do you live with your parents at 839 Aurora? Or do you live at a different address? Because that is a difference. And as much as you may not want to acknowledge that there's a problem with filling out a form accurately, there's a problem with filling out a form inaccurately. There is a problem there. Meanwhile, state courts show that Bowie has been convicted of overstaying at a parking meter 11 times last year, with each incident occurring in Minneapolis. On August 18th and August 15th, the dates of her latest citation, she was also charged in Minneapolis of having expired license plates, another petty misdemeanor. Come on. Together, hey, I'm just a radio host. I'm not actually serving the people. I'm not actually a representative who's been elected. But I know to get my license plates updated. I know not to, if I get a parking ticket, to pay the parking ticket. Oh, by the way, I got a note to myself. I got to pay those tolls down in Chicago from when I was down there. I need to make sure I pay those. I'm writing actually on my hand because I'd forgotten about that. But you know what? That's what the deal is. Now, by the way, I'm not behind on that. I still have, I think, till Wednesday to pay those. But still, you know, that's what you have to do. That's what responsible people do, is you pay your bills. She said, together in May 2022, a speeding ticket at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport and a December 2020 parking ticket in downtown St. Paul, she has incurred more than $1,330 in fines and late fees in the past 3 years, all but $75, which remains unpaid, according to a state court records. The court records show that all but two of the tickets have been sent to a collections agency. Bowie said last week she'd been unaware of the debt but would pay it off. This is being brought to my knowledge about parking tickets. I can pay my parking tickets. Well, I'm going to make the argument here. If you have listed an address that you don't actually live at on official documents and you're getting parking tickets, I might buy the argument, and I don't know. Patrick, have you gotten a parking ticket lately?
Not lately, no.
When the last time I got a parking ticket, which was 20 years ago, there was a piece of paper on my windshield. Maybe they just send it to you now. I'm not sure what each jurisdiction does, but in this case, if they're sending you and they're not putting a piece of paper on your windshield, or if you're like a lot of people who will find the piece of paper, take it off, throw it in the garbage can and say, well, it wasn't there when I got back to my car, they'll send you a copy of the ticket to your address, which then brings back the problem of if you weren't at that address, even if you were two or three houses down, well, maybe that's why you haven't seen anything about these tickets. The citations list her home address at the 2700 block of Lexington Avenue North in St. Paul, although the address actually corresponds to an apartment and townhome community located near Central Park in Roseville and the Roseville License Center, about 2 miles north of St. Paul. She registered a political consulting firm, Run Like Harriet, at that address in 2021. Bowie ran for St. Paul's Ward 1 seat in 2019, said she lived at the Roseville residence after the campaign ended until the end of 2022, around the time her campaign for city council launched against in earnest. "It sounds like I haven't received my tickets because I haven't changed my address or my driver's license," said Bowie in a recent interview. "I have no problem paying. My taxes go to my Ward 1 address. My health care insurance is connected to my address. Checks in the mail go there. My most valuable and important documents go to my address." Well, not the parking tickets. Bowie is engaged to Jameel Lundy, who is a campaign worker, attorney, and lobbyist for Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty's office. Recently bought a house in Minneapolis. Bowie's last week said the two obviously spend time together, but we don't live together. She said she was in the process of buying a home in St. Paul. You know, okay. Giving you the benefit of the doubt. Giving you the benefit of the doubt. This is a really flimsy story. This is a real... Let's say you spent a few long weekends at your parents' place. Fine. But you should have an address if you're running in the district, in the district. That should be given. Now, one of the things the Pioneer Press story doesn't say is whether it's against the law to represent a ward and not live in that ward. Maybe it's completely legal, but it becomes a little bit of a campaign problem if you're saying, "I'm here to fight for Ward 1. By the way, I live in Roseville." You might think you can just tap dance your way out of this crap. You can't. All right? And I want to give this warning to all people who want to run St. Paul, Minneapolis, any of the large suburbs, any city for that matter. You know, don't lie about your address. Don't deceive about your address. Don't play coy about your address. Either you live where you live or you don't live where you live. And if you say, "Well, I live here, this is my address," and then basically you have a whole bunch of parking tickets that you have no knowledge of because they're going to the address that you don't have, well, that kind of only makes the problem worse, doesn't it? It kind of does. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Now, we can go to the other side of the aisle, and I will rip on this person. Now, this is actually not someone in Minnesota. This is a guy running for office in Montana. But it is still pretty damn funny as a person who lives in the metro area. This is from Bring Me the News. "What qualifies as rural Minnesota?" The answer might not be cut and dry, but probably most would agree that Shoreview, a suburb of St. Paul, Shoreview, mind you, doesn't quite fit the bill. No, it doesn't. Nonetheless, Tim Sheehy, I believe is how you say it, S-H-E-E-H-Y, a Republican, he's running for U.S. Senate in Montana, has claimed a rural background despite growing up in a multi-million dollar lake house in Shoreview, says the Montana Free Press, reported in December. He's a farmer there. What are you growing, some weed out in the garden? I don't know if you're necessarily on the back 40 in Shoreview. This, by the way, hasn't stopped Sheehy, who is also an ex-Navy SEAL. Apparently they didn't teach you not to lie. Aerial firefighter and millionaire business owner, from talking about his early life on the supposed farming community on multiple occasions, said the Daily Beast, reporting on Friday. In one instance, the website says Sheehy claimed to have grown up in rural Minnesota in an October 23 podcast interview, adding that, "Although we are not farmers, I grew up in an old farmstead that was surrounded by farmland." In Shoreview. As Daily Beast writes, Shoreview is a quintessential Minneapolis, Minnesota suburb, Twin Cities suburb, rather, I should say, a place where pavement dominates pasture, And indeed, a zoning map of the city's website shows little presence of farmland, as he insists he was surrounded by it. With regard to Sheehy's childhood home, the news notes that the property sits just 3 miles from a Trader Joe's. You know, rural. Much closer than the nearest Fleet Farm, the fishing, hunting, and farm supply store popular in the state. The city is also 10 miles away, about a 14-minute drive from downtown St. Paul. 10 miles away from downtown St. Paul, hardly calling Greater Minnesota. She, 38, has also been plagued by allegations of lying about a gunshot wound he sustained in the military. What? With the Washington Post reporting that he has sometimes contradicted himself and made puzzling statements about aspects of his Navy shooting, his Navy activity, rather, I should say. Now in the midst of his primary bid that's decided in June, Sheehy's hoping to win his party's U.S. Senate nomination to take on John Tester, the Democrat, himself a third-generation farmer, who is, they've tried to make this into an argument that he's not really rural, but Johnny's suburbs here ain't rural either. But this is who the Republican Party is. And we want to know the truth is, let's just be honest about it. They have basically conformed the Republican voter base into saying it doesn't matter. This guy has clearly lied about where he came from. No different from the St. Paul City Councilwoman. Who's lying, you know, who, it sounds like at one point she lived at that, might have lived at that address, but the landlord has said, I don't remember her ever living here. She was thinking about buying the address. She wasn't actually living there. She lived actually a few doors down. So, I mean, yeah, it kind of is a lie there. But that's no different from this. I want to make sure we point out the difference in how we react to these things. You know, the Pioneer Press is doing this story on this, and you know, there's already the right is, how dare she? This is just, is there anything more St. Paul politics than this? She should resign her seat immediately. But it's a very different narrative when, you know, this story that I'm reading about Sheehy is actually posted in Bring Me the News, who is one of the few news outlets I find that actually does post, you know, basically, you know, fair coverage. They got it from, was it the Daily Beast? Was it, where was it here? The Daily Beast, yeah. The Daily Beast get it. That would be more of a progressive news outlet. They picked it up because of the Montana Free Press. The only, it would be one of those things, imagine if this was a Democrat and the Montana Free Press put this story out. Guarantee you the national media would have picked this up. But no, it takes a left-leaning mag and basically Bring Me the News pointing out, it's like, it's pretty comical you're trying to compare yourself to that, saying Shoreview is somehow the back 40. It's not exactly, you're not out living out in Butternut, Minnesota there, when you're living in Shoreview for this to get coverage. Meanwhile, I've already seen multiple stories about the St. Paul City Councilwoman and basically, you know, oh boy. I don't mind you're covering the St. Paul City Councilman. I don't. As a matter of fact, I did, because I thought it was actually a viable news story. But where is the equal time coverage of this? I'll give you another great example of this. There's talk right now, and this is more of a national story. In 2019, an investigation, this was done by the Houston Chronicle, found that 700 victims, many of them children, had been alleged sex abuse by leaders in the Southern Baptist Convention. 700 kids, America's largest evangelical denomination. The Christian Light deflected the smearing public sector schools as groomers. Meanwhile, as they're out there attacking teachers, attacking drag queens, attacking this, 700 leaders in the Southern Baptist Convention were guilty of sex abuse, many of the times with children. You probably, if you're like me, you the first time you saw this, like, what? Wait a second. When did this story, it's 2019 the story broke? I never really heard this story. And why? Because it's about the right. And, you know, the media has this tendency of, oh, well, that's a local story. That's a local story. I get really tired of this crap. I do. I don't mind a news outlet calling out a Democrat, as long as when a Republican does the same exact thing, they call it out. As a matter of fact, that's most of my job here, is pointing out the hypocrisy of all this crap. But the reality is that this is, you know, when you look at this level of dishonesty, what reality is this. The media knows the Democrats have no tolerance, really, for dishonesty within their own party. They don't. As a matter of fact, they're in the process, this guy that's running up against Mary Franson, who's got a criminal record, they're in the process of purging him from the party. The other side of it is, the same media knows that the Republicans don't care. That you could live on the 40th floor of the IDEA Center and say you're a farmer, and they'll say, gee willikers, golly gosh, we'll have to agree to disagree. They'll go out of their way. And they know, because the readers who are the right don't care. For God's sakes, Donald Trump basically compared himself to Jesus. They didn't care. One side of this country almost is overcompensating when it comes to the other side. You know, while the other side basically doesn't want any compensation at all. It's like I hear people that will say, this country has gotten so divided, I can't believe how we got here. How did we get to where things are so bad? And first thing I said is, don't you remember in 2003 when the right was screaming, Democrats don't support the troops? Do you remember in 2008 where you were screaming, where's his birth certificate? Do you remember all these things? Because I remember all these things. I remember the evil. I remember all this. And funny story, when all the stuff was being said by the right, you guys didn't say a damn thing about the lack of civility within our political structure. Didn't say a damn thing. But all of a sudden, the Democrats start punching back, and it's like, oh my God, can you believe how divided we are? Where was your outrage back when all this started? Oh, that's right. Either you didn't mind it because you agreed with it, or you didn't mind it because you knew the people that were listening to that was geared towards didn't care. We're in this divided country right now because back in 2003, we as a society, the media and us as wholes should have smacked that crap down, and we didn't. So yeah, we're divided now. Not the most divided this country's ever been, no. But we're divided. But make sure you understand, for the record, where the division began. And after years of everyone ignoring that division, the left started striking back. And you guys all of a sudden now, well, this is just too much. Yeah, you should have been, I agree. But this should have been addressed 20 years ago, not waiting around till today. Let's take our final break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Going back to Drazkowski, who basically railed against giving... scholarships to whose families make less than $80,000, because that's discriminatory against the rich, but then actually turning around and saying, why aren't we giving this money to the rich? Because that's discriminating against them, so we should be giving that money there. Patrick, you brought up a good point in regards to when we were having this discussion about the lunches, right?
Yeah, because I remember the main argument against universal school lunches, but rich people don't need that. We don't want to give free lunch to rich people because that's a waste. They don't need that.
Yeah, that has been their kind of consistent argument, that that basically, unless we're giving something, let me give you the hypocrisy of the right. Republicans will have a program that say that out of 1,000 people that get, say, food assistance, they find one person is getting food assistance they shouldn't deserve. They're going to basically scream at the top of their lungs how you have to get rid of the entire program because 1 cent of fraud, 1 cent of fraud shows me that the tax system is failing us. Meanwhile, when you point out, oh, there's a lot of millionaires and billionaires who aren't paying their fair share of taxes, that they should be paying their fair share of taxes like everyone else is in the country. They'll say to those, well, all they're trying to do is keep their money. Why do you want to punish them? The hypocrisy of it all. No, I don't have any problem with some of my taxpayer dollars going to help out a lower income family get a kid to college or helping out a hungry family to get a sandwich. I could care less. I think that's a great use of my taxpayer dollars. Do you know what I don't think is a great use of my taxpayer dollars? A guy that can write a million-dollar check to a college to get a wing of the library named after their dog, basically getting free tuition to that college because if you don't give it to the wealthiest people, you're discriminating against them. that's what I think is a huge waste of money. I think it's a huge waste of money to give any more tax breaks to people who make more than $1 million a year. Absolutely. They have gotten every freaking tax break for the last 40 years. Giving them any more is just ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. So, no, I there are some ways you can easily waste your taxpayer money. Giving kids who need a college education one or giving hungry people food, that's not one of them. Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a good one. We are back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.